This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to The Science Bug. I'm Morgan Marion.
And I'm Simon Connolly.
This week, Simon sat down with Dr. Umat Somji. Umat is a research fellow with the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute and an expert on bug weaponry. They chatted about the New Zealand giraffe weevil, a large native beetle where the males have huge heads in order to fight each other for females.
So I guess my first question is, what brings you all the way here to little old New Zealand?
So me being in New Zealand is a really long story. But the short version of it is that I came for the weevils. New Zealand has the world's longest weevil. It's a brented weevil in a family of weevils that are often generally very long and have big differences between males and females. There's usually a lot of sexual dimorphism. And the first time I saw one species in this family of weevil, the jousting weevil, was in Panama. And when I saw them, I was immediately interested and curious. Males have this extremely elongated head section that they use in jousting-like competition for mating opportunities. And I could see dozens and dozens of individuals fighting on these logs. And I could see females shorter in length and stockier drilling with their heads, with the tips of their heads, into the wood. And I could see them turning around and laying eggs into those holes. It was just a really fascinating system to watch. And I later found out that one of the biggest species in this family, the New Zealand giraffe weevil, is found in New Zealand. And it turns out that it's probably not a coincidence that this huge insect is found in New Zealand, because New Zealand historically didn't have terrestrial mammals. This allowed a lot of insects to grow to really large sizes. And so my work in New Zealand is now in a protected sanctuary that's mammal-free, at least terrestrial mammal-free, and has a high density of these weevils.
That's really cool. So you were working on a very similar group in Panama, seeing these fascinating behaviors of males jousting with their heads, essentially, and females drilling into solid wood, but those behaviors are shared by a species in New Zealand.
I know, the parallels are fascinating. I was really interested in the assessment behavior in individuals. So what I noticed was when two males approached each other, they would line up parallel to each other, kind of head to abdomen. And because they have long, skinny bodies, it just looked like they were two parallel lines. And then they would antennate. And if there was a big size difference between them, the smaller one would walk away pretty rapidly. But if they were evenly matched in size, the fight would start to escalate. And after a bit of antennation, there would be the stereotypic waves of each other's heads where they would strike each other with their heads and try biting at each other's legs. And it was really interesting because, first of all, there's this really interesting measuring, almost assessment part, where it seems like they're assessing each other's size, and then there's this escalation of the fight as the fight gets more intense. And I just found it really fascinating and interesting to watch.
How big are these weevils? How big are the biggest males? How big are the smallest males? How big are the females?
So the biggest males are, the biggest ones we've measured are close to 9 centimeters long. The smallest males are about 1.2 centimeters long. So that's a pretty big difference in length itself. But we really get an idea of the difference when we measure the mass. So if we measure the weight of these weevils on a really sensitive scale, we'll notice that the small weevil is about 30 times smaller in mass than the largest one. When we first did this a few years ago when I was in New Zealand, I was really surprised. We thought we had a mistake with our scale, and we measured it again. We weighed the weevil again, and we got the same answer. And then we ended up going to a different lab in the building and trying to borrow their scale and measuring the weevil again, and we got the same answer. In the end, we found out that size difference 30-fold size difference. It's so extreme. If the smallest weevil was the size of a person, the biggest individual would be the combined weight of two adult giraffes. And this is individuals in the same species and in the same population of equal age, as far as we know, competing for the same mating opportunities. So this is, as far as we know, the biggest size variation in beetles and one of the biggest size variation of sexually reproductive adults in any animal that we know. The morphology is so extremely different between males and females. And most of the morphology we know now that males have that's extremely exaggerated is shaped by competition. That's really fascinating to me. I mean, they look so different that early taxonomists identified males and female New Zealand giraffe weevil as separate species. But now we know they're one species, and they look strikingly different from each other. And so I think in some ways that competition adds this fascinating level, especially because in so many other Brentids, in other related species of weevil, they've developed different ways of competing with each other. And in most of the species, we don't know how they use their exaggerated or modified morphology.
So you said that these males will antennate to each other. What's antennation?
They're sweeping both the antenna backwards and forwards, and this might be a way to detect individual intruding males, mm-hmm. Because their heads are way back closer to their body, and that area in front of their head might be a blind spot for them. So this antennation might help them assess whether there are intruding males around, especially these much smaller males that might be present in the population.
So these males are sitting kind of on the tops of females, essentially, and using their antennae to kind of sweep around them for other males that might be trying to mate with that same female.
Exactly. And that happens both in the New Zealand giraffe weevil and in the jousting weevil in Panama. And the differences are also interesting because in the jousting weevil, males sit diagonally across a female. So just imagine a female is drilling and a male is diagonally across her with his head on her body. While in the New Zealand giraffe weevils, males stand directly over the female that's drilling, kind of parallel to her or directly on top of her.
If people want to find a giraffe weevil, where should they be looking?
Well, the New Zealand giraffe weevils are found on fallen logs of certain tree species in the forests of New Zealand. The logs have to be a certain age, so this is an age that is good for females to drill in and lay eggs. And they also aggregate in little clusters, so you'll see little patches of high densities of weevils. They're really striking. Males have a greatly elongated head and long antenna, and they have rather subtle markings on their body. Males are slightly darker than females in coloration. Males are almost black or gray with subtle yellow stripes, and females are more brown with those yellow stripes. But when they're on a log in the forest, they can be surprisingly hard to see, especially females. And so if you were to be taking a walk in a forest in New Zealand, I would keep my eyes peeled on recently fallen logs, maybe a few months old, and just look out for that really elongate, slender body shape of the New Zealand giraffe weevil. The Brented weevils.
So you've mentioned females drilling into wood. Is that a literal drilling?
It's almost literal. So females have this elongated head region, which is typical of weevils. Weevils commonly have this elongated head region. It's a feature of the group. And in many species, females have sharp mandibles at the tips of that head, and they use those mandibles along with motions of the head to drill into plant tissue, or in this case, hard wood, so that they can lay an egg inside the tissue and the offspring can develop inside the plant tissue itself, or in this case, the log. When you see this, it's really fascinating to watch because they start off by grabbing on to the surface of the log with their front legs, and you'll notice that there's big muscles on their front legs, mm-hmm. on the femurs. And then they get into position and they start swiveling their head back and forth. the tip of their head has two pretty sharp mandibles, and recently we've scanned the weevils using x-ray scans and found those mandibles have extremely high density, so they're very hard. This back and forth motion allows her to start drilling a hole into the wood, and then eventually when that hole gets deep enough, she'll start to remove little chunks of sawdust that she's as she excavates that hole where she's going to lay an egg.
And you can watch this entire process happening, the female drilling into the wood and removing the sawdust and throwing it away.
Exactly, yeah. If you're patient, you can watch it. Things are happening a lot quicker with the jousting weevil in Panama, where females take anywhere from 15 minutes to 40 minutes to drill into the wood to lay an egg, while as the giraffe weevils take anywhere between an hour to 3 or 4 hours to drill a hole.
And that leads me on to my next question. So the female spends all of this time drilling into solid wood, which for such a little weevil seems like such a big job. And it's the females, like you say, they have these huge kind of muscles on towards their front and on their front legs to help them achieve this drilling. Is it not a very, very energy costly way for a female to lay a neck?
If you watch the females doing this, it feels strenuous. It looks like it's an arduous process. And it does look like it has high energetic costs. And it's also surprising that a female only lays a single egg usually in a hole that she takes hours to excavate. So it's probably extremely energetically intensive. And it takes, you know, it takes a lot of time. So if a female takes 3 hours to drill a hole in a day, you know, in daylight hours, she could probably only lay 3 eggs during daylight. And mm-hmm. So there's probably some high limitations to the energetic costs of performing this behavior to lay eggs.
So what is the female getting out of that? Why does she spend all this time and energy laying an egg into the wood when she could just plop it under a leaf somewhere like a lot of weevils, I imagine, do?
Well, one of the things that we are learning from our research, we've been watching females lay eggs and then coming a week later to excavate the eggs ourselves. And we've noticed that once in a while we'll find an egg that has been taken over by a fungus, so it's a dead egg. And so you can imagine there might be predators on the logs. There's probably parasitoid wasps and other insects that may eat those eggs. But the larvae might be extremely vulnerable themselves. So after they hatch, it's really interesting because we don't know much about what happens between the larval stage and the adult stage. We know that the weevils take anywhere between 1 or 2 years feeding on the wood within the log before they emerge and pupate to become adults. But we don't know what's happening inside that wooden log. We don't know the different pressures that these larvae are facing. We don't know if there's different areas of high or good wood quality that they're using. So there's so much to learn about these weevils.
So the female lays the egg into the wood, and then the larvae spends all that time down there feeding on the wood itself. So that would be part of the female's investment, shall we say, into drilling into these holes. It gives their larvae a safe place to complete huge part of their life cycle.
Exactly. During this really vulnerable stage, a larva is born into a cocoon of protection. It's completely protected by solid wood. And we've both excavated these eggs and used wood carving tools to slowly peel away different parts of the wood to expose the fragile egg. And so it seems to be very well protected in there. But what's amazing to me is that from this fragile egg emerges a larva with mandibles strong enough to be able to chew its way through this hard wood. And that's pretty striking to me, because carving the wood out with carving tools is pretty hard. You can feel how hard the wood is. And to imagine this tiny larva that's, you know, maybe the size of two mustard seeds can chew its way through this hard wood. It's pretty amazing.
We as human beings, with our specially crafted tools and years and thousands of years of technological development, are struggling to keep up with these weevils.
Exactly. They've been at it much longer than we have.
That's true. Yeah, we can give them that, certainly. I just have a few more questions about how their behavior around their reproduction works. So the female spends all this time drilling a hole to put an egg into. And then you said she lays the egg into the hole. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, so a female will, after spending all this time drilling a hole to lay an egg, after she's finished drilling, which we've watched many, many females drill, and it's hard to tell when a female's finished, but when we know she's finished for sure when she takes her head out of the hole and turns around. And this is when she starts probing with her ovipositor and with the tip of her abdomen, and you can see the tip of the abdomen kind of searching. And eventually it finds that hole. You can see her tighten her grip on the surface of the log with her legs. And if you look really closely, you can see this pulsing kind of movement on the tip of her abdomen. And that's her pushing an egg out and pushing it into the hole where she drilled for so long. Recently, we were videotaping a female laying an egg, and we noticed that she would also deposit some fluid into that hole. And then, using the tip of her abdomen, she'll grab little pieces from the surface of the wood close by and plug up that hole with little pieces of wood and bark and lichen. And so when she is done with covering the egg up and walks away, it's impossible to tell, at least for us, where she laid that egg. It's really well sealed. And later on, when we're digging out the eggs, we notice that the hole is so well sealed that we often, it's difficult to distinguish it from the rest of the wood.
So how would you describe that structure that the female is using to reach and grab parts of wood into the hole?
Well, you described it as a grabber-reacher.
I believe my exact wording was little reacher grabber butt, which...
Little reacher grabber butt. Yeah, keep forgetting the order in which you say that. But yeah, it's a little reacher grabber at the tip of her abdomen.
Yeah.
It's an amazingly efficient, and it works really well. And it's really fascinating to see, because it's unusual for us to see an insect and then realize that it has this structure at the other end, at its non-head end, that is really versatile in grabbing and picking stuff up and moving stuff into the hole. So yes, little reacher grabber.
So the females are spending potentially up to hours drilling into the wood. So let's go back to what the males are doing during that time.
So typically we'll see males patrolling the surface of the wood. When they come into contact with a female, they'll often antennate, so they'll move the antenna rapidly back and forth, swing their heads over the female. And if there's another male present, it almost always ends up in some sort of interaction between those two males. If the male is smaller, that male usually leaves. But sometimes, if the male is similar in size, there'll be an escalation of assessment and a fight between these two individuals. In the New Zealand giraffe weevil, males will reach back with their elongated heads and grab hold of either the opponent's legs or their elytra, so the extensions of the hardened hind wings, and lift their opponent up. And you can see the strain when you see this fight happen. You can see the strain on the opponent's body as its body is being pulled up. And the only thing holding it on the log is the claws in its hind legs. And every once in a while you see that grip. It loses its grip on the log, and the weevil can be thrown off the log by the other male. Sometimes both males will tussle and both fall off the log.
So the males are fighting each other whilst protecting females. So what are they fighting over?
Well, we notice that they're fighting over these mating opportunities. And after a male mates, they'll usually stand guard over a female. And so this brings us to some of the questions that we're trying to find answers to. Because when we see these competitions happening and we see multiple males engaging in copulation with a single female that's drilling, it's really interesting to figure out which of those males are going to be the father of that single egg that female lays in that hole that she drills. She'll only lay a single egg in that hole, and so there's only one opportunity for paternity. So is it going to be the male that guarded her for the longest period of time? Is it going to be the male that mated last with that female? Or is it going to be, every once in a while, you'll see these very tiny males sneaking around in the population, and sometimes they'll insert themselves between a guarding male and a female. Because the size difference is so huge, they seem to escape detection by these very large males. Because of the big size difference, they can't even engage in that behavior that large males will do, or males of even size will do, where they'll measure each other and assess each other and engage in the stereotype fight. So they appear to do these different behaviors, and it'll be very interesting to know if these small males also get a proportion of paternity on the log where these females are laying eggs.
That's really cool. So it's a very kind of high-stakes competition for these males, where they get, like you say, they get that one opportunity to father that one egg that female is laying in that moment.
Exactly. And that might be the entire reason why there was likely strong selection to have these really exaggerated weapons. They can account for about half of the body length of males in the New Zealand giraffe weevil, but these weapons account for more than two-thirds of the body length of males in the jousting weevil. So they're almost like a walking weapon.
Yeah. That's incredible. So the huge size of these, of the bigger males, these ones that are around 9 centimeters long, and I do want to clarify for the audience, that is 9 centimeters, not 9 millimeters. These things sit very comfortably in the palm of your hand. That extreme size, and the extreme size of their weapons in particular, is driven by what you were talking about before, these fights and opportunities to mate with the females. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that we often find with structures that are used in competition as signals in competition for mating opportunities is that larger individuals are not simply scaled up versions of smaller ones. Large individuals invest disproportionately more in those weapons compared to small ones. So in this case, a male is not only larger in body size, but he dedicates a higher percentage of his body size to that large head that they use in fights. So when I first saw these weevils in Panama, they were really fascinating to me. I was really engaged. And so I looked them up in the literature, and I found out that the last time somebody had studied this weevil's behavior was in the 1970s, more than 40 years ago at the time. And before that, there was very little mention of these weevils or their behavior. But when I looked into the literature, I found out that somebody had worked on these weevils in Panama a little bit in the 70s and 80s. But the only other person since then that had worked on branded weevils was Dr. Chrissy Painting in New Zealand. And she had been working on these weevils for more than 10 years. When I found out about her work, I was really intrigued and really happy that somebody had recognized how interesting and bizarre and how many questions these weevils could help us ask. Just because of their mating system and behavior and extreme investment to these exaggerated traits, they seem to be really well suited to asking some really interesting questions. And when I contacted Chrissy, she was so gracious and she invited me to come and study the weevils with her. I found out that when she started her PhD working on these weevils, nobody had any behavior data on these weevils. Very few people knew about them or knew details about their behavior. In fact, I think many other entomologists doubted that it would be a good project to do a PhD on because many people found them hard to find. But Chrissy was able to find them, develop all this basic natural history information that's so valuable that we're using today. And now they're a great model to study behavior and evolution and mating systems and competition. I mean, the fact that you get individuals that have a 30-fold difference in mass within the same population is interesting for so many reasons. And the fact that they have this extreme scaling of different body parts as they different size, different behaviors, and different mating behaviors. I mean, these are all really, really fascinating things that are interesting in other animals, but are really highlighted in this species because of the huge size differences between individuals.
So the reason that you're able to study this and work here in New Zealand is because of Chrissy's work to develop this system.
Exactly. Chrissy developed all of the basic natural history work on this system, and there'd be no way that, you know, I would be able to ask the questions that I do if there wasn't somebody like Chrissy who developed the system in the first place.
You can hear the second half of Simon's interview with Umat next week, where they'll be talking about how the weapons on these crazy weevils actually work. You've been listening to The Science Bug with Simon Connolly and Morgan Marion. You can find us at Science Bug Pod on Instagram and Twitter. This podcast is made possible by Free FM, and you can find our previous episodes on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting app. Catch you next time!
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.